Sure, a couple of years later, they gradually restored scholarships and put him back in bowl games, but still, that program could have been dead for at least the next decade. Yet here they are, number two in the nation now. 2, 5 years later. We constantly see programs hire the wrong head coaches. Penn State, though, hired 2 consecutive home runs. Bill O'Brien to take them through the hardest years, and James Franklin to potentially take them to titles. 5 years, folks. Wow. With the ESPN Radio Sports Beat, I'm Dari Noka.
Larson is next man up after surviving Talladega.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
I'm Woody Kane. The story next on NASCAR Today.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders from KFC here with some real news. My delicious world-famous original recipe fried chicken is available at a KFC near you. It has been and will be until the end of time. No matter what's happening in the world, you can trust that my original recipe chicken is always made with the living herbs and spices. Many unnamed sources agree. It's delicious. Get it at a KFC $10 chicken share and enjoy it with a friend. KFC, it's still finger-licking good. Limited time offer. Participating KFCs. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
Kansas Speedway's first playoff elimination race is coming. Here's some reasons to be there. Reason number 88. It's Dale Jr.'s last Kansas NASCAR Cup race. We can all lift a cold one to that. Reason number 78. Martin Truex Jr. Because underdog stories make the playoffs even better. Did I mention it's the playoffs? The Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Hollywood Casino 400, Sunday, October 22nd. Tickets at kansasspeedway.com.
Kyle Larson only managed a 13th place finish at Talladega Sunday, but considering the trouble most of the other playoff drivers had, he's in a pretty good spot now with 4 of the remaining 12 facing elimination at Kansas this weekend.
Going into Talladega, I thought we had a pretty decent point cushion, but we didn't gain any stage points. And then there for one little bit during the race, I'm like, gosh, I might be towards the cut line at the end of this thing. But all the playoff drivers end up crashing, and it worked out for us. And I think we maintained our points position.
Larson's the highest ranked driver who hasn't already punched his ticket to the next round, 29 points above the cut line. He was a guest today on MRN Motorsports Monday. Catch the full show at MRN.com. I'm Woody Kane. This is NASCAR Today on the Motor Racing Network.
6:05, welcome in. Hour number 3 of the Todd Brummelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn here on KGYM. Todd Brummelkamp along with Alex Kuhn. That's why the show is called what it is. Kyle Mann, our producer on the other side of the glass, informing us that we've got to push Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago back to 6:30 tonight. So he'll join us coming up at the bottom of the hour to preview Game 3 of the National League Championship Series tomorrow at Wrigley Field. The Dodgers taking Games 1 and 2 Saturday and Sunday night at Dodgers Stadium. And doing so in dramatic fashion last night, John Lackey coming in out of the bullpen. Not Wade Davis. Let's put it that way. It'll be interesting to hear what Jesse has to say about that and what Joe Maddon had to say when he met the media today at Wrigley Field. We touched on some NFL news today. Podcast is going to be available if you're just joining us and missed the first 2 hours today. Unfortunately, you also missed your chance to win a $30 gift card to La Cantina Mexican Bar and Grill, but that's the bad news. The good news is we've got 4 more of them, and that means your next chance to win is coming up tomorrow with us after 4 o'clock. Iowa did not play Saturday. They had the week off, as did Penn State, but the rest of the Big Ten in action. Some intriguing results. I don't have the official number in front of me, but I was told unofficially by Scott and Mark that we picked up another 4 games or so in the Carl and Ernie's pick 6. We are slaying it.
Who won this week?
Killing it. It was either Sean or me.
It was you.
Somebody said me. Okay.
Are you poor-boying it here?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm unaware. But if I won, it's my first feather in my cap this week, and we'll see whether we can make it 2 weeks in a row. But one of the games that I was relatively certain about was Rutgers was going to beat Illinois, and they did, winning by 11 at Memorial Stadium. Both teams now 2-4. Some other intriguing games. Northwestern went on the road and was able to survive a road trip to Maryland, winning 37-21. The Wildcats are next up on Iowa's schedule. We'll hear Kirk Ferentz and the players talk about what they expect out of Northwestern when we meet with them tomorrow in Iowa City. Number 7 Wisconsin hangs on for a 17-9 win over Purdue at Camp Randall Stadium. The Boilermakers managing only 3 field goals, but Wisconsin managing only 17 points against Purdue. That fascinates me because you and I have talked about Jeff Brohm and the job that he's done in West Lafayette. And there were a lot of, what was that, a 17-point spread game, and there were people thinking Wisconsin was going to wipe the floor with Purdue.
Didn't understand that.
Not a great game, not one that they're going to archive at the College Football Hall of Fame or anything, but Wisconsin had to fight to get to 6-0. Number 17, Michigan goes on the road and needs overtime in Bloomington to beat Indiana. The Hoosiers continue to struggle against the Wolverines. It's been a very long drought for them. Michigan State survives a fourth-quarter onslaught from Minnesota at TCF Bank Stadium. They won 30-27. But the game that a lot of people were talking about on Saturday, Lincoln, Nebraska. Ohio State, the number 9 team in the country, goes on the road. They were the highest favorite to enter Memorial Stadium since 1957. They covered the 24-point spread with ease as the Buckeyes beat Nebraska 56-14. Ohio State up 3 spots this week. It was a good week for the Big Ten in the AP Top 25 poll. Ohio State goes from 9 up to 6. Wisconsin is up 2 spots despite the struggles with Purdue from 7-5, and Penn State moves from 3-2. Michigan State also moves up 3 spots from 21st to 18th. The only Big Ten team to move backwards in the top 25 this year, this week, was Michigan. They're down to 19th from 17. And before we move on here with Nebraska, would you look at number 25? It's the Memphis Tigers, now 5-1 overall.
How about that?
A big win over Navy.
Correct.
This weekend.
Second top 25 win at home this year.
It's interesting. Navy is coming up in conversations with the Cornhuskers.
Yes.
Is it not?
They are. With the hiring of the new athletic director.
Bill Moose, right?
Bill Moose.
62-year-old guy from Washington State.
Yes. So, obviously, the name Mike Leach is going to start coming up when it comes to Nebraska presumably looking for a new head football coach. I know they still have Mike Riley right now, but I think there are plenty of nails in that coffin to the point where we pretty much know that he will not be the head coach at Nebraska next year. So Mike Leach was one of the first names to come up. Scott Frost is another name that is going to come up quite a bit, especially if his UCF team continues to climb in the rankings and push their way for a New Year's Six Bowl. And another name came up, which I found very interesting. Ken Niumatalolo, the head coach at Navy. I know I've talked about this. Nebraska has struggled to find traction offensively since the days of the triple option. The West Coast offense has failed. The spread offense has failed. The West Coast offense failed with Callahan. The spread offense didn't work very well. Bo Pelini's pro-style offense was to mixed results. So, do you go back to the triple option? Would Bill Moose make that move, whether it be Ken Niumatalolo at Navy or Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech? It'll be interesting to find out. I think we both agreed, though, Todd. As much as we like Mike Leach, I think that would be a terrible, terrible fit in the Big Ten.
Bringing Mike Leach to Lincoln would be the equivalent of the Huskers turning to Bill Callahan and trying to bring the West Coast offense to Lincoln. You don't have the personnel on hand right now, so it would take a year or two to try to turn things over, and that would mean another year or two of losing, and I don't think the Nebraska fan base has that in them right now. And it certainly sounds to a point as if Moose is going to evaluate Mike Riley, that there's still a chance that he could, let's be honest here, there's no chance.
Way.
But I'm not automatically buying the fact that the AD brings the guy with him from their last school. And Leach, I think, has a good thing going right now in Pullman. And I would stay there if I were him. It's relatively under the radar. I would say sort of low pressure. And he's not a guy that does well in the spotlight. He's eccentric, and that just doesn't play that well at a high-profile place. He was better off in Lubbock or Pullman than he would be in Lincoln. I think Mike Leach is a great coach. I think he's a fantastic football mind. He's off the Hal Mumme coaching tree. Iowa Wesleyan down in Mount Pleasant. We had him. He was one of the first guests on my very first afternoon program here on KGYM. And I say my, I was about as far from being the guy in charge of that program as you could possibly be at that point. But it was my bright idea to reach out and try to get Leach on the show because he was coming back to Mount Pleasant for a reunion. And we got him, and he was on a fishing boat, and he couldn't have cared less. And it was awesome. I thought it was great radio. And I wish that we still had that interview laying around somewhere. But I digress. Nebraska, I thought, had to move quick in making the hire of an athletic director because, as a lot of people were saying, Riley is sinking further and further, but you can't fire him if you don't have an AD to hire the next guy or to basically appoint the interim and get things figured out. So now that Nebraska's got a new AD, it can move forward in figuring out what the exit strategy is here because you need an exit strategy from Mike Riley, whether it's mid-season, whether it's at the end of the year, but you need to start formulating how you're going to move on from him, and that's what the new AD is doing. They're doing the same thing at Tennessee right now with Butch Jones, who today said that they did everything they needed to do to beat South Carolina last weekend, except score touchdowns.
That's a bold strategy.
There's coach speak, and then there's what that guy spews.
He's trolling us. He has to be doing that intentionally at this point. Champions of Life. What was the recent one? It was
Life Reps or something.
Or Leadership Reps.
Leadership Reps.
It doesn't matter that
we did everything that we could to stop the bank robbery in progress, except for catching the robber. We did everything that we could do to win that football game except for scoring points is essentially what he said over the weekend. He made it through the bye week. I think he's going to make it to the end of the year. They're going to be looking for... Look, there could be at least two, I would say, high level. Now, granted, they haven't had a high level of success for quite some time. Good luck telling their fan bases that. But two very high level college football programs who are at the end of the year going to be looking for new head coaches. And one of them is Tennessee and the other one is Nebraska. I don't think Mike Leach should be a candidate for that. It's oil and water. Now, you mentioned going back to the triple option, and man, I think it would make a lot of Nebraska fans happy to play that old-time style of football, but there's got to be a happy medium, right? I'm not saying West Coast and run and shoot Mike Leach, Bill Callahan, but I'd be very hesitant of going back to trying to play wing T Forrest Evershevsky football to localize it a little bit more. There's got to be a happy medium. And look, Sean Keeler at theland of 10.com, the former Des Moines Register columnist, had a really nice piece over the weekend at Land of 10 with regular fans talking about Scott Frost. And a number of them are saying, I don't think this is the guy, but I think it's the guy that we're going to wind up with. Or it's the guy that they're going to wind up with that they don't want. The fan base is divided right now even on who the next guy should be. Some of them don't even know. That's not where you want your program. And then again, because Iowa didn't play last week, Minnesota loses, Wisconsin wins, you look at the Big Ten West standings, Nebraska is all alone in second place right now. Mind-blowing.
It is.
That all of the crap storm and Lincoln and the fact that Mike Riley is a dead man walking and they got pounded in back-to-back weeks by Wisconsin and now Ohio State, it is mind-blowing to me that given all of those circumstances, that team is alone in second place in the standings.
I think they're going to continue. I just look at that team, the eyeball test tells me that they're not very good. And I think that the Ohio State game just solidified that. But as far as the triple option thing goes, I asked this earlier in the sports office. Would Nebraska be okay with Paul Johnson-type results at Georgia Tech, where you see a 9-10 win season, followed by a couple of 6-7 win seasons, then an 11-win season, then a three-win season, a little bit up and down. Would they be okay with that? And it's hard to imagine that they would. And what I will say about who they just hired, Bill Moose, their new athletic director, he will do a couple of things. Well, number one, he'll be much more of an ambassador for the football and basketball program, for the entire athletic department, than Sean Eichhorst was. Sean Eichhorst was known as the invisible athletic director. He was never out in front of anything except when he was criticizing a coach. The second thing that he'll do is what we talked about. Remember our discussion with Adam Rittenberg a couple of weeks ago, Todd, where he said, I asked him, is Scott Frost going to be option number 1, 2, 3, and 4 for this program? And he said, he can be option number one, but it would be doing a disservice for that athletic department to go out and say, he is our guy and not look at anybody else, not make an informed hire. Bill Moose, he's not a Nebraska tie, not a Nebraska guy. He has no ties to anybody within that athletic department, but he will go out and he will evaluate everything and try to find the best coach for that program. So I think at least they found somebody who is A, qualified, and B, is impartial to who the next coach will be.
Now, the other interesting thing here is before Bill Moose went to Washington State, he was at Oregon and was there at Oregon during the years in which they started to get things rolling from a money standpoint and started to get the facilities turned around in Eugene, and then he moved on to Washington State. He basically is a guy who has built up athletic departments, and Nebraska is not a place that needs any building up right now. They need somebody to come in and fix the football program. So to me, this is an interesting hire. I think I was expecting somebody a little bit younger, not to bring ageism into this, but I guess in times of turmoil, turning to someone who's a little bit older, sager maybe would be a good way to put it. Maybe that's not a bad move, because you've tried the young up-and-comer and a couple times now, and it's sort of blown up in your face. But it's just interesting to see that program, which is so desperate to tie back into the past, completely leave the family. Unless there's some tie there that I'm unaware of, this guy is from out west, has spent most of his career out there, and is just riding into town with a clean slate. And you know what? In hindsight, maybe that's what Nebraska needs. Somebody who maybe has a passing knowledge of that program's history, but a guy who's not going to come in there and be beholden to the Tommy Fraziers or the Johnny Rogerses of the world. He's going to be his own guy, an independent thinker, and he's going to do what he thinks is best. But there are a lot of people, at least in reading the Omaha and Lincoln beat writers and columnists over the weekend after this hiring was announced, that are questioning this. And that's not a good place to be if you're Nebraska, because you need to hit a home run with the AD, because he's the guy who's hiring the cleanup batter, so to speak.
Wasn't the person going to be questioned regardless? And not necessarily by the media, but by the fans. I feel like if they went out and they got somebody with Nebraska ties, the narrative would be, oh, well, they did that because they wanted to, they're hanging on to the past, and they wanted to get their own guy in there, and they didn't go out and look throughout the country to find the best guy. And then that would be the narrative if they went and got a Nebraska guy. Now, the narrative here is, well, they needed a Nebraska guy. They needed someone with ties to the state. So I'm thinking that this is a good thing for their program, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's built up the Washington State program or athletic department. He did it at Oregon, and he doesn't necessarily need to do that, like you said, at Nebraska. But what he needs to do is he needs to make a football hire, and you know what? Possibly a basketball hire too. We'll see what happens with Tim Miles, the basketball coach. He'll have an evaluation.
Yeah, they
here.
Don't care. I mean, that's what this is all about, football.
That's true.
And I know what you're saying here, because Tim Miles is walking on thin ice. But now the interesting thing in looking at Moose's resume is, and granted, you have to take into account where Washington State was before he got there. That's what makes this number seem relatively impressive. But they had an 81% increase in gifts to their version of the iClub the foundation there, the Cougar Athletic Fund, from 2010 to 2016. 81% increase. So the guy can raise money, which tells you he's popular with the boosters. And he's made a pretty good decision in bringing Mike Leach to Washington State. That worked out very well. I wouldn't say it would be a good decision for him to bring him to Lincoln. Now, 3250 on the Hertin and Stocker text line says, I'm a lifelong Husker fan. I would love Mike Leach as head coach. You'd be surprised how well he would be accepted. That said, Scott Frost is going to be the fan base front runner. I would be very leery of Scott Frost, and I've said this a number of times. He has a very small track record as a head coach, and he's doing it in a non-Power 5. And I always tread lightly when I say that, because I'm worrying about offending you here, Alex, because there's good coaches in the group of five, outside of the Power 5, but there's also some bad coaches.
Oh, there are.
And you never know what you're going to get. By the way, I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned Dino Babers yet, who got a big win at Syracuse against Clemson. One of seven top 15, top 20 teams to lose over the week.
Yes,
what was the number?
I think it was seven.
It was an insane weekend of college football, and the Hawkeyes just were sitting on the couch watching. Yeah,
I love Dino Babers just the same way that I like Mike Leach, and they're the same type of coach. And Bill Moos brought Mike Leach to Washington State because he knew it would be a good fit. A rebuilding athletic department, a rebuilding football program, and they were going to be able to give him 2 to 3 years because that program was so awful that they wouldn't expect any results early. And you're in a Pac-12 where you see some spread offenses. You see that type of play, and it fits in. Dino Babers in the air raid offense and Mike Leach in the air raid offense, just, I'm not saying that it can't work, but it hasn't really yet to this point. And as much as I like Mike Leach and as much as I like Dino Babers, I think Bill Moos, he talked about it. He's going to bring in a guy who is a good fit, and I don't think those two qualify as that at Nebraska.
2745 pointing out, I think without saying, that Moos wouldn't have gotten Leach if there wasn't a fallout in his previous job, his being Leach's. And yeah, at Texas Tech, Leach had a question as to player discipline, and it was a high-profile case.
Yes,
because it involved the son of Craig James, who was at ESPN at the time. And, yeah, there would be a little bit of a cloud. Now, he's gone out. Again, it was a great move. You see this all the time. Coaches who get a blemish on their record, whether it be cheating like Kelvin Sampson, and they get a second chance somewhere. Well, Kelvin Sampson's second chance was at Indiana, and it didn't work out so well. And then he's getting a third chance now at the University of Houston, and we'll wait and see on that one, right? But this was an opportunity for Leach to go someplace, remain in a Power 5 conference, but remain sort of off the radar because what's the knock on the Pac-12? They're playing their games when most of the country is either thinking about going to bed or they are in bed. And so they just don't get a ton of attention. It's part of the reason why it's always difficult for Heisman Trophy candidates on the West Coast to mount much of a campaign. So he's able to go out and do pretty much whatever he wants to do in Pullman. Program was in bad shape, so he's going to get a long leash. He's a popular, quote-unquote, big-name hire. So the fans were going to embrace him for the most part and accept him. And Leach has flourished out there. Now it's Moose's job to find out who that Mike Leach character is going to be for Nebraska.
Yes.
Don't try to bring Leach to your new job, which I really don't think he is going to be interested in bringing Mike Leach with him. I think he wants to find the Mike Leach who's going to best fit in this situation. And I don't think that it's Scott Frost. And his first 200 emails from fans have probably been about Scott Frost, either for or against.
3844 on the text line, ask another question about a possible candidate for Nebraska. What about Joe Moorhead from Penn State? He's going to be a highly courted name this offseason. He has ties to the eastern part of the United States. He would probably like to stay there because he just moved to his family to Penn State. I heard that from Adam Rittenberg. He was born in Pittsburgh. Yeah. He has connections to that part of the country. And I'm guessing that he'll hold out until he finds a job over in the eastern part of the country, but he's going to be a highly sought-after name, and I'm sure he'll get a call from a lot of schools, possibly Nebraska, because he is that good at his job.
Yeah, I don't, and I'm looking at his resume, and there's not much on there as far as openings go. He's been at Georgetown, Akron, UConn, and Fordham before going to Penn State, so it's not as if there's an easy pair of dots to connect there in his background, but he's going to be one of those guys without the previous head coaching experience that people are going to be pointing to is, yeah, and we've seen this be successful. We've seen it backfire, but Bob Stoops had no head coaching experience when he was hired out of Florida to take over at Oklahoma. Kevin Wilson was a coordinator when Indiana hired him. A number of coordinators have gotten chances, and some work out, some don't, but I'm with you. Moorhead is the reason Penn State is having the success that it's having right now, not necessarily James Franklin, who, as we've mentioned numerous times, was on the hot seat last year before Joe Moorhead arrived and turned things around. And look at this. Now they're the number two program in the country behind only Alabama in today's AP Top 25.
Now, Cajun Troy brings up a couple of good points. First of all, I think LSU might be looking for a head coach.
I said there
were
two big-time programs, high-profile programs.
That'll definitely be.
She said maybe there would be a third. The Saints are playing the Packers this week. I would like to not acknowledge Cajun Troy, but now that Aaron Rodgers is out, I don't care anymore.
She also brings up another name that was brought up.
The Mad Hatter.
In conjunction with the Minnesota job last year. You made a very good point about what would happen if Les Miles got hired at Minnesota. What would you make if Nebraska hired the Mad Hatter?
If I were an Iowa football fan, I would contact the Nebraska Athletic Department and offer to donate whatever I could afford for Nebraska, but only if they hired Les Miles. I think hiring Les Miles would be the biggest gift that Nebraska could give the Big Ten West. I've never been a big fan of go out and get the known name who just seems to get recycled, and people hire him because he's a name. And
Jeff Fisher.
Les Miles is that guy. You know, is there an opening? Oh, Les Miles. Let's give him a chance. And then he's good but not great. And then he's out of a job again. And you're thinking, okay, what's going to become of this guy? And then the next time that there's an opening, people say, oh, go out and get Les Miles. Get Les Miles. Predictable would be my opinion of hiring Les Miles at Nebraska. They're in a very precarious position because they know it's a lot of P's right there. Peter Piper, pick to peck. They're in a precarious position because I think they need to take a little bit of a chance on the next hire. But that's also the last thing that Nebraska and its fan base wants to see is taking a chance. And maybe that means Scott Frost is the guy because he would be taking a flyer on him, but he wore your jersey and the fans are going to give him a little bit longer leash than they have given to some of the guys who've come to Lincoln and not been Nebraska guys. 6:30, let's keep it here. I'll have Kyle give you a Midwest One Bank Big Board update. Midwest One, where you're the one.
Iowa sophomore Jordan Bohannon was named to the Bob Cousy Award watch list today, a 20-player list identifying the top point guards in the country. Bohannon scored 10.9 points per game last season and also became just the second freshman in the last 25 years to log 175 assists and 85 threes. The depth chart for the football team was released today, and whereas Imani Hooker was named the starting strong safety last week, Miles Taylor's back in the mix, listed as a co-starter. Tristan Wirfs is the starting right tackle, and Ryan Gersandi will be the punter. The Big Ten announced Iowa's game hosting Minnesota on October 28th will kick off at 5:30 and broadcast on FS1. And Iowa State also decided on a start time for its homecoming game against TCU next week. That'll start at 2:30 and broadcast on an ESPN channel. Iowa State senior Trevor Ryan was also named the Big 12 Special Teams Player of the Week today. He had a 68-yard punt return for a touchdown in the 45-0 win over Kansas. The Rough Riders lost to the Omaha Lancers in their home opener on Friday night, 5-1, to move to 1-2 on the new season. They're off until this Friday when they'll host the Lincoln Stars. Tonight after the show, we'll have Monday Night Football between the Colts and Titans. That'll be on 106.3 FM, the South Gym, and 107.5 FM, the North Gym. And on the main gym, we'll begin with the Cyclone Call-In Show right after we get off the air. And when that wraps up, we'll join Game 3 between the Yankees and Indians in progress. That's going to be on 1600 AM, the historic main gym.
Jesse Rogers, good to go here coming up in a couple minutes.
Sure is.
All right. I know he had some work that we had to push him back. We were supposed to talk with him at 6 o'clock tonight. Jesse Rogers, ESPN Chicago, previewing Game 3 of the National League Championship Series and looking back on the Cubs' 0-2 start on the West Coast. He's with us next. 106.3, 107.5 FM, 1600 AM. It's KGYM Radio. Back with more after this.
Let's go, Hawks! Let's go, Hawks! Let's go, Hawks!
Cheer on the black and gold in your black and gold from BravoSportsMarketing.com. BravoSportsMarketing.com has everything you need as a true Hawkeye fanatic. Game day apparel, football ticket packages, Hawkeye posters, and the popular American Eats Farmers gear. Get your hands on the new Fight for Iowa logo tees, available in black or gold. You'll definitely want one for the blackout game against Ohio State. BravoSportsMarketing.com also has game tickets to all home Iowa games. And BravoSportsMarketing.com is the only place you'll find Hawkeye Village ticket and tailgate packages, including your game ticket, tailgate-style buffet, musical entertainment, and more. Hawkeye Village packages currently remain available for all home games. Get them now. BravoSportsMarketing.com. Over 20 years of authentic Hawkeye gear for serious Hawkeye fans.
Even the most talented players don't make a winning team without a great coach. I'm Lisa Nolan with RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts. And as a lifelong Cyclone fan, I appreciate all the Iowa State coaches. As a realtor, I am your coach. I identify the strongest selling points for your home, I understand the details of this market, and I always make a clear plan for your success. Let's work together to buy or sell your home. You can contact me anytime at lisanolanrealtor.com. We'll make a great team.
Jim Gray from Westwood One here with a Monday Night Football preview. Kevin Harlan and Hall of Famer Kurt Warner in Music City to bring you AFC South action between the Indianapolis Colts and the Tennessee Titans. Both are 2-3 with quarterback injury issues and underperforming defenses. For the Titans, veteran running back DeMarco Murray says they will bounce back from their two-game losing streak.
Just got to, you know, focus in. You know, each player has to look at himself individually, offensively speaking. You know, defense play well. We can't have those guys on the field for that long. And offensively, we just got to, you know, trust in ourselves. It has nothing to do with the coaches, nothing to do with the play calling. We have to, each player, each position group has to take it upon themselves and play better. Simple as that.
Indianapolis hopes to build on last week's win over the 49ers. Join us for the Colts at the Titans on Monday Night Football.
Remember to listen to Westwood One's coverage of the NFL all season long, right here on KGYM.
At the Home Depot, free carpet installation means free carpet installation. And free includes clearing out furniture, ripping out old carpet, hauling it away, even carpeting stairs with no hidden fees. Free installation on carpet $699 or more means free installation. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid on carpet priced $1 or more per square foot. Specialty items may be priced separately.
Napa Know How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
If you finally decided to address your hearing loss, the MD Hearing Aid AIR is a medical-grade hearing aid that costs up to 90% less than traditional hearing aids. Designed by a Chicago doctor, the MD Hearing Aid AIR has a sleek, nearly invisible profile. This digital hearing aid incorporates technology and features found in hearing aids costing thousands of dollars. The AIR offers advanced noise reduction, making speech clearer and virtually eliminating annoying background noise. Three environmental settings put you in control. You select the best setting for your location. Call 1-800-758-2010. Over 100,000 satisfied customers have already made the call. Call right now for our exclusive 45-day risk-free trial and get free shipping and a year's worth of free batteries, a $50 value. Call MD Hearing Aid at 1-800-758-2010. Satisfaction guaranteed. That's 1-800-758-2010.
Welcome back in, 6:37, final 20-plus minutes of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn as we take you up until 7 o'clock tonight. 1600 AM listeners, you're going to get the Cyclone Sideline Show. John Walters from the Applebee's in Ames, Iowa State, coming off a 45-0 win over Kansas this past weekend. They've got Texas Tech in Lubbock on the horizon. Our FM listeners tonight, you've got Monday Night Football coming your way, Indianapolis and Tennessee. The game we'll be bringing you. Let's go ahead and dive right into it. Glad that he was able to join us tonight. Jesse Rogers from ESPN 1000 in Chicago and ESPN.com. And my first question for you, Jesse, having tuned in to a little bit of the post game last night, is how is Cap today? Because I know he was taking last night much harder than a lot of the fans were.
Good. I talked to him this morning. He's okay. A lot of players were asked if that's a killer loss. I mean, it doesn't matter when you lose. It's not like they gave up a 4-run lead in the ninth. I mean, it was a tie game, and you lost in the ninth inning. So they're down two. They're in a big hole. A lot to scrutinize because these have been close games. But mostly they're just not pitching well out of the bullpen, and they're not producing some runs. So that's two out of three things you need to do to win a game. Luckily, they are getting some starting pitching, but that's not enough.
The biggest question I think a lot of fans have is actually the headline on your latest piece, why wasn't Cubs closer Wade Davis on the mound at the end of Game 2 last night? Is it possible that Joe Maddon was providing a little cover for Wade Davis? He's taken a lot of slings and arrows over that decision.
I think in a normal circumstance, Wade would have been there. They're not normal. He threw 44 pitches on Thursday. I mean, anybody that thinks that Joe Maddon would rather have John Lackey potentially face Justin Turner than Wade Davis is crazy. Joe Maddon, there's a reason Lackey's barely pitched in the playoffs, and there's a reason Wade Davis's arm is about to fall off. So they just tried to massage an out of Lackey. It didn't work because it was either get an out from and then go to Davis if you get the lead, or get one out from Davis and he's night, and also the idea of warming him up, when would they bring him in exactly? It was just a mess. Maddon doesn't know what to do. He's got 5-6 relievers all struggling. They're walking guys to lead off innings. It's a mess right now. So he tried to get out of it using an experienced veteran against Taylor before Turner came up, and he walks him. I mean, walks have just killed the Cubs in the second half out of the bullpen. So, I mean, Wade Davis wasn't in the game because of the circumstances stemming from his 44-pitch effort. Even though they could have used him, they just didn't.
One of the big differences in this series so far has been, like you mentioned, the difference in the bullpens between the two teams. Is it safe to say right now that Joe Maddon is really only confident in one reliever, and that is Wade Davis?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that's what the fan base thinks, at least. I'm sure Joe is feeling similar as well. I mean, I think he's okay with C.J. Edwards. He knows C.J. is going to be up and down, but he's got great, great stuff. I think he's okay with Pedro Strop. I think he's wondering about Mike Montgomery more than anyone these days, the guy that made that last out in the World Series. He's not getting lefties or righties out. So, there's levels of trust, and I think Montgomery is down low, and a few of the other guys, even the ones that have struggled, are a little bit higher. He's trying to say the right things to provide some confidence for those guys because he knows, and he said this several times, we're not winning 8 more games without, you know, a few relievers other than Wade Davis. So he got a good inning out of C.J. Edwards, but that doesn't mean he'll get one tomorrow. It's hit or miss right now.
Jesse Rogers joining us talking a little Cubs baseball in advance of Game 3 at Wrigley Field tomorrow. The bats, especially the big bats of Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, have gone silent. Is this just a byproduct of facing tremendous pitching, or what can be done, if anything, at this point, in your opinion, to get those guys going?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly that. It's mostly the tremendous pitching. I've noticed something this year in particular with the Dodgers, and maybe it's, you know, Andrew Freeman's pretty good GM and scouting staff. I mean, their advanced scouts on the Cubs have been great, meaning their pitching plan has been great. Earlier in the year, they were throwing high fastballs. Cubs were swinging and missing. Right now, on Bryant and Rizzo especially, there's a plan. It's all soft stuff. Now, part of that is the pitchers. A guy like Rich Hill throws soft, but even the relievers are in there. I think those two have struck out 21 times combined. 19 have come on off-speed pitches. Only 2 strikeouts have ended on fastballs on Bryant and Rizzo. So the pitching plan is great and the execution is great. What can they do? If I knew, I'd be a hitting coach somewhere managing. Getting back home is going to help. I just feel like, you know, the whirlwind of Washington to L.A. here. I think they just need a reset at home. I think actually getting these lefties in the lineup off of Yu Darvish, I think, will be good. I like Schwarber and or Zobrist and Happen there tomorrow. We'll see. So I don't have many answers, but I think just settling in and playing a few home games will help the offense.
Jesse, it's not just the Cubs that have been doing this. It's been a major league-wide thing, and it seems like we're seeing it more during this postseason than we have in the past. But what are your thoughts on managers in general using starters out of the bullpen? Because it's come at some very, very much varying results to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should really only be in an elimination game if the guy has been somewhat rested. I don't think you should just alter everything because he's a starter and he technically has better stuff than most relievers. So I think they're using it maybe a little bit too much. You know, Joe Maddon did it with John Lester and with a game to spare, you know, up 2-1. I like the idea in game five or a game seven, you know, emptying out the bullpen. I don't know if I like it in between everything. Look what happened. He used Lester in game four against the Nationals, even though the Cubs were up 2-1. He threw 58 pitches. They still lost that game. And then he was taxed for his start yesterday. Lester was, you know, obviously laboring by mid-game. So it affected them the next series. And I know you got to win one series before the next, but at some point, common sense has to take over. So to answer your question, I don't like it unless it's just an elimination game for both teams where you have the whole offseason to recover.
Other than obviously getting the bats going, is the key to extending this series and worst-case scenario avoiding a sweep just getting the starting pitching to go into the seventh and maybe even the eighth inning to try to give that bullpen a rest?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Now that they're back home, the day off has reset the staff as well. Nobody's pitching on short rest. I mean, Quintana and Lester both pitched on short rest after coming out of the bullpen last round. So you start with Hendricks. That is absolutely an advantage for the Cubs. He can go seven. He can go eight. He could go nine. And we saw Verlander go nine. If they don't need to pinch hit for Hendricks, you just leave him in and let him go. So yes, I think you're right. You gotta limit the amount of innings that bullpen has to pitch for the Cubs to have a chance.
For the Dodgers, their bullpen so far, eight innings, have not surrendered a hit. How much of a luxury is that for them that their starters really only have to go five innings and come out with a lead if they want to win the game?
Show me another situation where a starter in a 1-1 game or whatever it was would be pulled after 79 pitches in the playoffs. I mean, that's the Rich Hill pitch threw 79 pitches. That's a little bit more than a bullpen session. So, I mean, it's amazing that Dave Roberts can basically close his eyes and point to anybody in that pen and get a good outing, where Joe Maddon has to close his eyes to watch his bullpen pitch. So it's just weird how it's gone that way. And, man, they're going to have a lot left of the tank if this series goes six or seven. I'm talking about the Kershaws and the Hills, who both threw under 90 pitches. So, yeah, it's been a huge luxury for Roberts. Good for him. He's using everybody correctly. Kenta Maeda's in the pen, and he's doing well. It's really a good situation. The Cubs are behind the eight ball. We knew that once that series went five, they were going to be behind the eight ball. It's simple as that. They went five. The Dodgers went three and had home field advantage for this round. That's going to put you behind the eight ball. And that's why when it was close games, you had the lead in both game one and two. You really needed to steal one because the opportunity was there. Now you got to go on some sort of run where you win two out of three, three out of three here at home, and then pray for something back in L.A. So it's not perfect, but it's not insurmountable.
Last question before we let you go, Jesse. What do you expect the atmosphere to be like in and around Wrigleyville tomorrow with this 0-2 hole and the sense of dread hanging over the fan base?
No, I think the dread came last year. The sense of dread came last year until they won it. So, I mean, people are going to be disappointed and upset if they lose, but it'll be fun. It'll be rocking and rolling. It's supposed to be in the 60s. The weather usually determines how the crowd's going to act more than anything. So they're going to be into this. I mean, there's an old saying, you used to hear it in hockey more than baseball, but it doesn't start until a road team wins a game. So tomorrow, huge. I mean, the crowd will be into it. Now, if they go down 3-0, tickets scalper, you know, people be selling tickets for Tuesday, Wednesday, and all that jazz. I mean, Wednesday will definitely have a different feel if they're down 3-0. Right now at 2-0, the defending champions until further notice, it'll be a great atmosphere there.
All right. Hopefully Cap was able to go home and use that MyPillow and maybe eat some Malnati's and hit the reset button after last night. Jesse, we appreciate it as always.
Stop giving his places so many plugs anytime, guys.
Jesse Rogers, ESPN 1000 in Chicago. Cap loves his MyPillow, and he is a Malnati's guy through and through. As you know, I am. After Mrs. Malnati and I.
That's right. Jody Davis.
We shared that Jody Davis moment in Chicago at the Cubs-Cardinals game earlier this year. I want to see this offseason what Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer do to address the Cubs bullpen, because Wade Davis is a free agent. There are some characters who have been there now for a couple years that I think have overstayed their welcome with the fan base. Even though they helped get the Cubs to the World Series championship last year, and they were a big part of repeating as the Central champs this year, the bullpen issues are rearing their ugly head. But this comes down to, it's not just one thing right now. And I think that's, I don't want to say I'm speaking for Cubs fans in general here, because that's really dangerous when you try to do that. But in sort of approaching this from the fan base's mindset, I think what's really frustrating here is it's not one thing. It's everything, and it's all at once. And if this were happening in May or early August, it's a blip on the radar. Nobody's noticing it. And it's happening in October, and there is no tomorrow in October if you lose a couple games in a row. And the bats aren't going, and it's not just the bats, it's the important ones in Rizzo and Bryant. The pitching staff is under a great amount of stress because of the five-game series against the Nationals. The bullpen has imploded. Like you said, they essentially have one, I'll say one and a half, because I think the outing by Carl Edwards the other night has sort of regained his trust a little bit. But they have one and a half relievers that Madden feels comfortable going to at this point. So unless the starting pitcher goes seven-plus innings, it's really difficult to put that patchwork night. Look at the box score from last night. Lester throws 103 pitches and can only go 4 2/3. Edwards is great for an inning and a third. Then you got to go Strope for an inning. Brian Dunsing, who's actually sort of supplanted Mike Montgomery as that lefty that you can rely on out of the pen, goes an inning and 2/3, issues a couple walks, gives up one. He's responsible for one of the runs there in the ninth inning. And then Lackey is basically out of desperation.
He got the last out last year. How important was Mike Montgomery last year during that playoff run?
Huge, because he was a successful swing man. He could go between the rotation and the bullpen, and he was comfortable with it. And as Jesse said, this year he's struggling to get right-handers and left-handers out. So you got to put him out there. And it's like, I don't want to spend too much time dwelling in the past, and Saturday in this day and age may well be 8 decades ago, but people were upset that Hector Rondon was the first guy out of the bullpen on Saturday. He was fresh. They added him to the roster. He was the only guy who wasn't taxed at that point, so Joe sort of had to go to him. 6:50. Always love having Jesse on the program. Does a tremendous job. We're going to take a quick timeout. We come back, we will put the finishing touches on tonight's show, get you ready for Monday Night Football and the Cyclone Sideline Show. Kyle's going to have another big board update for you, and we'll let you know what's coming your way tomorrow on a packed Tuesday edition. It's the Todd Bromelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn, right here on all three KGYM frequencies.
At Nationwide, our agents go above and beyond to understand and protect what matters most to you. Our local Nationwide agents are part of our member-driven community, where serving members' needs is our priority. Contact True North Personal Lines at itruenorth.com today. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio. Subject to underwriting guidelines, review, and approval.
Even the most talented players don't make a winning team without a great coach. I'm Lisa Nolan with RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts. And as a lifelong Cyclone fan, I appreciate all the Iowa State coaches. As a realtor, I am your coach. I identify the strongest selling points for your home I understand the details of this market, and I always make a clear plan for your success. Let's work together to buy or sell your home. You can contact me anytime at lisanolanrealtor.com. We'll make a great team.
Kubota's Orange Opportunity Sales event is going on now. Take on all kinds of jobs around your property with a Kubota BX Series subcompact tractor. The BX has the versatility to handle a wide variety of garden and yard chores. Now get financing as low as 0% APR for up to 84 months, plus great customer instant rebates and a 6-year warranty. Now through October 31st, 2017. See us or go to KubotaUSA.com for more information.
Kubota, a proud sponsor of Iowa State football on the Cyclone Radio Network. Visit a participating Iowa Kubota dealer near you.
I was 5-1 in the pick six last week, and I'm 21-21 overall on the year.
Coming back.
It tells you how bad. Look, only two of our pickers are above 500. You're 26-16. Heck, we got to take you to Vegas. And Duker is 23-19. Everybody else is treading water at 500 or sinking slowly. It's how Vegas makes its money. It is a glorious, glorious thing.
I was going to say, speaking of Vegas, I don't like to give shout-outs or anything, but one of our own here in the building, Zach Johnson, got married over the weekend.
Not that Zach Johnson.
Not that Zach Johnson. One of our part-time producers, Zach Johnson, got married. Congratulations to Zach and T. And we know everybody here at KGYM and across the hall at Rob FM and Z102.9 are very happy for them.
Oh, look at you making me tear up here in the final couple minutes of the pro. That was touching.
Yes, it was. I don't do that often.
They got married in Vegas?
They did.
Was it planned or did they elope?
It was planned.
Okay.
It was planned.
It's no fun unless you elope. Not going to happen. It was with a guy out in Vegas one time. I thought I was going to have to talk him out of getting married. Strange things happen sometimes when people feel like they've been hit by Cupid's arrow in Las Vegas. 6:54. Well, let's send it over to Kyle. He's got your final Midwest One Bank Big Board update of the night. Midwest One, where you're the one.
Iowa sophomore Jordan Bohannon was named to the Bob Cousy Award watch list today, a 20-player list identifying the top point guards in the country. Bohannon scored 10.9 points per game last season and also became just the second freshman in the last 25 years to log 175 assists and hit 85 threes. The depth chart for the football team was released today, and whereas Imani Hooker was named the starting strong safety last week, Miles Taylor's back in the mix, listed as a co-starter. Tristan Wirfs is the starting right tackle, and Ryan Gersandi will be the punter. The Big Ten announced Iowa's game hosting Minnesota on October 28th will kick off at 5:30 and broadcast on FS1, and Iowa State also decided on a start time for its homecoming game against TCU next week. That'll start at 2:30 and broadcast on an ESPN channel. Iowa State senior Trevor Ryan was also named the Big 12 Special Teams Player of the Week today. He had a 68-yard punt return for a touchdown in the 45-0 win over Kansas. The Rough Riders lost to the Omaha Lancers in their home opener on Friday night 5-1 to move to 1-2 on the new season. They're off until this Friday when they'll host the Lincoln Stars. Tonight after the show, we're going to have Monday Night Football between the Colts and Titans. That's going to be on 106.3 FM, the South Gym, and 107.5 FM, the North Gym. And on the main gym, we'll begin with the Cyclone Call-In Show right after we get off the air. And when that wraps up, we'll join Game 3 between the Yankees and Indians in progress. That's going to be on 1600 AM, the historic main gym.
I had no idea this was such a thing, but UNI has just announced that Jackson Scott Brown was named the Missouri Valley Football Conference Offensive Lineman of the Week. There you go, Alex.
Oh, they go by position?
Well, apparently.
I know they do the Pro Football Focus thing where they name teams of the week, but that's the only... I'm pretty sure that's the only Division One or FBS level position players of the week.
You think Gary Reim is going to sort of be excited to join us on Wednesday after that 38-18 win over South Dakota State?
He is going to be dropping Kabul's eyes right and left.
That's a crazy year for them. They're beating teams that they're probably not supposed to, and they're losing games they could win, and it's just got to be absolutely maddening, but... he loves this team, and you'll hear him talk about it with us on Wednesday. Gary Reimer, the play-by-play voice of the Panthers. Tomorrow on the program, it was Iowa Media Day for the basketball team today. It didn't get started until 2 o'clock, so in fairness and to make life easier on everybody here, including Kyle, we're going to get to a lot of the audio tomorrow. It gives him time to get everything ready. It's also a Media Day availability with Kirk Ferentz and the football program as they get ready for Northwestern, so you'll hear from Ferentz and the Iowa players on the show tomorrow. What else is on? I feel like I'm
I believe, Kyle, that Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette will be joining us to talk a little Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
I was able to hunt down an NFL guy. I got Todd a Packers guy.
And is Ed Creech tomorrow?
Ed Creech is tomorrow.
He is
we're packed tomorrow.
Wow.
And yeah. John Bonacamp's going to join us to talk about basketball. It'll be football tomorrow.
I don't want a stinking Dodgers fan on the program, but I guess if it's got to be anybody, it'll be John. He's going to want to talk about grittiness and Chase Utley. And by the way, Facebook informed me today that John and I have been Facebook friends for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So
hey,
I don't know what the anniversary gift is for that, but I'll have to come up with something for him tomorrow. Monday Night Football on the way for FM listeners, 1600 AM. It's the Cyclone Sideline Show. Talk to you tomorrow.
These are the $25 MediaCom's taking.